Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Dream On podcast. My name is Jen, and I'm your host. And this is an episode that I have been wanting to do for a while. I think the topic is pretty fun. So today we're going to be talking about fairy tales and bedtime stories in general. I think that this is a really interesting topic that isn't really covered enough in general. I know that for me personally, as a literature major, fairy tales in particular are something that I'm really interested in as a genre of storytelling, but also of literature. And what's so interesting about them, especially to me, is the fact that so many of them for such a long time have been oral like stories. So a lot of cultures, they didn't, you know, write them down. They just told them orally. And so people would like memorize them, and then they would make sure that they had them perfectly memorized before retelling them. And different cultures place a different amount of value on getting accuracy correct in these kinds of stories. So for some cultures, you know, it would be more common for people to tell the story and it would change and develop over time. Whereas for other ones, they would place such huge emphasis on getting the story right and like the same every time, that theoretically you could have the same story going on for hundreds of years and it would be exactly the same all the way through time. So I think that that in and of itself is super interesting. But then also I think modernly people have placed more interest and like value on kind of determining the underlying factors and themes within different fairy tales. And I think at this point within at least the pop culture that I'm familiar with, it's become way more common for people to talk about like, you know, oh, like Snow White, you know, that's a warning for girls to not like stray and lose their virginity to some random man. Like it's people kind of place like new, you could argue that they're new interpretations, or alternatively, you know, the main argument is like that was actually implied in the original story and that was actually the intention of the story all along. So there's a lot of interesting stuff like that. And obviously, like the kind of Disney fairy tales, I think also within pop culture, most people understand that that really clean, sanitized version of the story isn't accurate to what the story really is or like really was in the past when people were telling the story to their children. Like, you know, in Cinderella, the stepsisters, like one of them cut off her heel of her foot to make it fit in the shoe, and the other one cut off her toe to make it fit. And that also, right, you could say that there's a beauty standard message in there of like, oh, like, you know, having smaller feet as opposed to bigger feet is like more beautiful. So they want, like, they think that the most beautiful girls are very dainty and small. And so like, that's a message that you could argue is in the story. But anyway, that's a sidetrack. It's just an example. But yeah, like this is kind of why I think fairy tales are so interesting, because there is like inherent messaging, even if it's not something that's like hidden, even if it is something overt like that, you can really read into it and be like, well, obviously it's making this this assertion about beauty or whatever. So yeah, they're just very interesting. And I want to talk a little bit about fairy tales, but also bedtime stories and just their importance in terms of child development, because when I was researching this, it did turn out that there was a lot in that. And I want to give a shout out to a charity, which is the main source that I'm using for this episode. And the charity's name is called the Pajama Program. And the Pajama Program is a registered charity in the United States. And so their main main goal is to provide books and pajamas for children in the United States who may not have access to those things. And they're just trying to spread stories and kind of access to those stories to children who don't have the access to what they need. So I think that that's a really great cause. I think that's a wonderful message. And I am using one of their articles on bedtime stories as my source for this episode. So if you want to check that out, you can. I really enjoyed looking into the organization and the work that they do. And I did also go on another website, the Charity Navigator, to make sure that they were a real, like, credible organization before I gave them a shout out on my podcast. And they got a full, like, great rating as a trustworthy charity that's not just taking money and sitting on it, right? As some sort of, like, charity corporation. Because some charities do that, which is actually insane. But anyway, yeah, so Pajama Program, shout out to them. They have a great article on bedtime stories that you should check out And the name of the article in particular that I'm going to be talking about is called Why We Will Always Read Bedtime Stories. So now, before I get into the message of the article and the topic of the episode, you know that I have to do my, like, drama breakdown, like, catch everybody up with what's going on in my life, as usual, because somehow there's a lot going on and also nothing at all, which I think is kind of the normal pace of life. Okay, so first, I debated talking about this at all, but I decided that I wanted to because, like, it's such a simple situation, but it's also so crazy that when it was happening, I was like, are you so serious? And I'm gonna keep it kind of vague because obviously there are, like, real people involved in this incident and it's all, like, it's not even a big deal. But for me, it's a big deal, okay? Just, like, it's for me, it's a big deal. So my coworker asked me out, okay? Which is, like, a no-no, don't date your coworker. But I was like, okay, like, yeah, like, I'll go out. He was really cute. He was nice. And I was like, yeah, let's do it. Like, we'll go out. And then what ended up happening was the day that we were going to go out, we were just going to go out to coffee. It was, like, a super chill thing. But then I was like, oh my gosh, I have a dentist appointment. And so I was like, hey, we'll just go after my appointment. And he was like, oh, for sure. Like, no problem. And it wasn't a big deal, right? And then I'm on my way to the appointment, which is in the morning, and he texts me and he's like, oh my gosh, like, I'm so sorry, like, just profusely apologizing to me. And he's like, my car broke down, like, it's getting towed. And I was like, dude, like, it's not a big deal. We'll reschedule, like, not even an issue, right? That's totally fine. That's something normal that happens. And I was, like, feeling relieved because I was super nervous about going. Which, you know, maybe that should have been, like, a sign of some sort that I was so nervous. But then, okay, 2 days later, he texts me a picture of the car being towed. And he's like, this was my car. And I was like, okay. Like, it was so weird because I was like, why does he feel the need to prove to me that his car was being towed, okay? And, like, this guy, right, I'm 22. He was, like, older than me, which I didn't know. He's in his mid-20s. And I was, like, I didn't find that out till after from my other coworker. But, like, just like that, it was just weird, okay? It was weird. I was, like, why do you feel the need to prove to me that your car is being towed? Like, I believed him. There was no problem. Like, I was, like, for sure, we'll reschedule. Like, not a big deal. And then after that, like, I wasn't interested anymore. And we had a class together as well. And because he goes to the same university, and he was like, you know, he would stop and he would walk with me after class. And I was literally giving every sign that I wasn't interested. Whenever he was like, do you want to reschedule? I was like, oh, like, I'm just so busy. And, like, I made it, like, pretty explicitly clear at one point, because this went on for weeks. I was like, hey, like, you know, I'm gonna be busy, like, for the foreseeable future. Like, and he was, like, so sad, and he was like, it was so, oh, I'm so mad now looking back. He was like, like, okay. Just, like, and it was so annoying, but, like, it was just annoying, right? There wasn't anything weird. And then at one point, okay, this is even before I made it, like, super explicit. I'm like, hey, I'm gonna be busy for the foreseeable future. Even before that, okay. This is so stupid, but you have to listen. My friend, okay, who, she's in that same class with us, she also works at the same place as we do, and so we all three know each other, right? But none of us have, like, shifts together, so we don't know each other as a group. It's just that as individuals we all know each other. And at one point he left class with her instead of me. And so I was torn, right? Because I was like, should I tell her that he's kind of weird and I'm getting these weird vibes? Like, is he dating her now or is he just pursuing her? Like, I had no idea. And this is before she and I were really even close at all. Like, we had never hung out outside of class. And I just decided, I was like, you know what? Like, it's none of my business. He and I never actually went out. Like, it's really none of my business. And also, if they are dating, I'm not going to be like, hey, you shouldn't date him. Cause, like, that's a freak thing to do. And she would think that I was, like, trying to keep her away from him or something, right? Which was not the case. And so I just decided, I was like, you know what? I'm not close enough with her for me to do that. Like, it's none of my business to tell her who she can and can't date, even if I think this guy's a little weird. And then what happens, okay, is that she and I get closer over the course of the semester. We have this class together. We start hanging out. And what ends up happening is we go to the this is so crazy. This is the crazy part. We go to the company, like, party, okay, for all the coworkers. And so we're all there, including him. And she and I and our other friend are all hanging out at the party, having a nice time. And he is literally attached to me at the hip. Like, he's hanging out with us. He doesn't relate to us. He's nothing like us. He doesn't get the jokes we're telling. Just, like, extremely awkward and very weird that he's there the whole time. And this entire time, right, the party is 2 hours. I'm standing there. I'm literally dying. I'm like, now everybody thinks we're together, which is exactly what he wants. And I can't be like, we're not together, because that wouldn't make any sense. It was just so weird and so uncomfortable the whole time. And then it's time to leave. And she and I go, and he just walks with us. Like, he's walking with us behind us the whole time. So weird, so uncomfortable. And she goes one way, I go the other way. And he walks with me because his car is the same direction as mine. And so we're going, and it's time for me to turn to my car. And I'm like, okay, bye. And I'm like running away. And he's like, wait. And I'm like, shit. And I turn back to him. And he has a present for me because this was the Christmas party. And I was like, no. And he's like, what do you mean? Like, no. And I'm like, no. And he's like, just take it. And I'm like, no. And so he's trying to give this to me. I say no 3 times and he's so confused. And I was like, hey, bro, like, this isn't going to work. Like, this is not going to work. And he tells me that he feels like he squandered something good with me. You need to understand, we never even went on a single date. He tells me that he squandered something good with me. And we have never even hung out socially. And I'm literally, like, flabbergasted. Like, I don't even know what to say to him because he doesn't know me at all. And I don't know him at all. And it was just the weirdest thing. And so he leaves, okay? After telling me that he feels that he squandered something with me, and also telling me that he must be too sensitive for me and that's why I don't like him, because he's so open with his feelings. You guys literally listen to this show. Do I seem closed off to you? So then I'm standing there and I'm so frustrated, but I don't want to argue with him because I don't actually care what he thinks. And so I just am like, okay. Like, I literally, everything he's saying, I'm just like, okay. And then he leaves and I walk to my car and I immediately text my other coworker that I was walking with. And I text her and I'm like, hey, so, like, that was super weird and uncomfortable that he followed us. I'm so sorry. He's been trying to go out with me. I literally have told him that I'm not interested, especially tonight. I was like, hey, don't talk to me anymore. Like, I literally had to be like, hey, don't speak to me anymore, because I will, like, report you to a supervisor. Like, this can't happen anymore. Like, you're not allowed to follow me to my freaking car. And, you know, just so you guys all know, like, he has completely stopped talking to me. So we're good. This happened months ago in December. So I'm in the clear. And also, I was never afraid for my physical safety at all. He wasn't like, no, it wasn't an issue like that. Because I'm not stupid. I would have, no, it was, no, it's not a problem. So you don't have to worry about that at all. But he's just a weird guy. And I was just like, but yeah, I texted her. I was like, hey, like, you know, sorry about that. That was freaky and weird, and he's just like that and just a loser. So then she calls me an hour later and she says, girl, he's trying to date me. And I was like, what? And she's like, yeah, no, I thought he was hanging out with us because he was trying to hang out with me. And so it turns out that for the whole time that he was trying to date me, which was most of the semester, about halfway through that, he went on a date with her. And then throughout all the time that he was trying to date me and texting me and all this stuff, he was also actively going out with her and hanging out with her and texting her. And he just assumed that neither of us would realize that he was dating both of us at the same time. And it's just like, it's so funny and just like crazy. And the situation itself, honestly, like, I feel like this happens all the time. Like, nothing actually that crazy happened. But for me, I'm like, this is just like a stupid like sitcom plot. Like, this would be like one episode of a sitcom. But for me, it was like months of time, because the time in the middle of the semester when he left with her, that was like the week that they went on their first date together. And that was also a couple weeks after I had started being like really evasive and being like, you know, I don't want to go out. Like, and so she said, she's like, oh my gosh, like he was trying to rebound off of you with me, but the whole time he still wanted you. And so he was still trying to text you and go out with you. It's just that he was also at the same time settling for me. And like, I just, I'm so tired. Like, it's so funny. And it wasn't like, she ended up really not liking him either, because he's just a weird person. And again, not like a dangerous person at all. Just like, just a weird guy. And like, just, yeah, no. But I just like, no. That was the craziest dating experience I've had. And we didn't even date. So I had to share that. And I don't, I think some of the people that listen to this show know me in real life. And so they've probably heard the story before. And I omitted some of the stuff that like makes him a weird person, because I don't need to share that. It's like none of my business. But yeah, just like trust that he's an odd guy. And just like it, the whole situation was just so crazy, because she was literally like, dude, like we're smarter than this. How did we not figure this out like a month ago when it was all actively going on? Because at this point we were both really not talking to him very much. I wasn't talking to him at all, but she was like still kind of being friends with him. And to this day, it's been months and he still doesn't know that we ever figured that out. And yeah, he hasn't talked to me, which is good, because I would report that to a manager. So yeah, that's where we're at with that. Just like, you know, I keep saying it's just like a crazy story, but it is. But also, I don't think it's that crazy. I think people listening to this have probably experienced something like that, and it was just weird. So mostly I just think it's really just hilarious. And if you like actually saw the guy and like knew the people involved, you would think that it was funny too. It's just like, I told my dad about like the gift after the party, and he's like, wow, that would have been really cute if you guys were actually dating and not strangers. And I was like, yeah, like it was like, oh my gosh. So anyway, and I did end up figuring out what the gift was. It was just like, yeah, it was just like a tote bag. It wasn't anything crazy. But he got it from one of our other coworkers and told them that it was for me. So she literally thought that we were together. So like, what's weird about all of this is that he was literally going around acting like we were actively dating, even though we had never gone out. And I know that he was also doing that to like one of our classmates in the other class, because one day when he was hanging back waiting for me for no reason, the other guy was talking to him and he was like, oh, like I'm going to stay, like I'm going to wait for Jennifer. And it's like, dude, we're not even friends. And you're like telling other guys that you're standing here waiting for me. And it's like, that's not explicitly saying anything, right? But like, people will assume why he is waiting for me is because we are going out. And yeah, so anyway, that was like, it's not really like a big deal, but it's, you know, I wanted to share the story just because I love telling it now. So, and this was all recent, and I'm sure that in about a year I'll forget that it ever happened. So, because it really just wasn't a big deal. It was just so funny. And then what else? Oh yeah. Okay. So in terms of my career, you guys know I want to be a professor. I have my schooling stuff set up for the next few years. Really the, just like the next couple years. Which is crazy that it's only a couple more years probably. And then I might after that have to do like an extra year and a half. If I want to get multiple master's degrees, we'll see. But, yeah, on the road to becoming a professor, which is wild, and we'll see how that goes. But I'm getting a lot of really good experience right now. And, my boss has been super helpful and just like really amazing and trying to help me get there. So yeah, I mean, I'm just excited. So like, you know, professionally, I feel like I have a lot going on and a lot going for me. And that's part of why the show has taken a back seat, because I have so much going on. But you know what's actually crazy is that this show has really shown me how to be eloquent and how to speak on the fly and have it actually make sense and be coherent and accurate to what I'm actually thinking. So it's really been a great experience, honestly. And if I ever have like, I'm trying to think how I would incorporate it into like a resume, because just the fact that I'm speaking and like, it's very similar to lecture. It's very similar to giving a lecture and talking about something that I'm familiar with, because it basically is like, essentially all of these are mini lectures and I just have my outline notes for each one and then I go on and talk about it. So it's been very helpful. And if you're thinking about going into a position where you might need to lecture or speak to people, this is really good practice, because even though you're not actively performing in front of people and there is no substitute for that, just being able to find the words quickly as you're thinking them is really, really useful, because you guys know I'm not scripting every word of this. I'm not reading from a document, and you can tell that I'm not. So it's just very good experience for that. So I appreciate that, especially from the show. So I've gotten to explore lucid dreaming and sleep and all these things that I love, but then also I'm getting really good experience in terms of speaking and being more eloquent when I'm talking. So it's great. Oh my gosh. Okay. I just looked at my outline for the episode and I have another thing that I have to talk about before I get into it. I know this is a super long intro, but I hope it's at least interesting and amusing. So so stupid. Okay, so I have to talk about the other thing that has been taking up literally all of my time other than school and work, which is like vastly the majority of everything that I do. I have also started playing Baldur's Gate 3, which is a surprise to no one. And yeah, it's a really wonderful game. And I played it literally so much when I first got it. For like the first 2 weeks, I already had, I'm trying to remember how much I had now, because it's been a while. I've had it for a couple months now. But as of right now, I think I have like 120 hours in the game and I've almost beaten it. So like for a lot of people, that's like a speed run. And I think I'm only like level 11 and I'm about to finish the whole game. Like I'm actually at the part where the final battle is the next thing that I'm going to do. And this is not interesting to people who have never played the game. So I apologize. But to be specific, I romanced no one. I turned down multiple characters because I wanted to be with Astarion. I'm so sorry to everybody out there because I'm so basic. But also, if you listen to this podcast, like, you know that that's who I was gonna pick. So I really wanted to be with him, but he didn't want me. And so now I'm at the very end of the game and I didn't realize that you had to do so much work in Act 1, because I didn't do work in Act 1. I just like
got through it and then I was like, all right, let's move on. Like, I didn't know there was so much to do because I just got the game and like I didn't want to look at anything online because I didn't want to spoil it. And I still don't really know like the options for the ending, like what the possibilities are, because I just want to finish it first and then I can actually look at stuff. But yeah, so I'm going to end up alone, which is fine, but it's also hilarious because that wasn't my intention. So in that aspect, I have totally failed the game and that's really sad. But I think I'm going to get hopefully a good ending and not a bad one. We'll see. But the game has really like taken over my life. So if you're interested in story games, that's a freaking good one. And it's so huge. I had to get, honestly, for all my games, I had to get an external hard drive for my laptop because it doesn't run anything. And also that game is so big that it could never fit on my computer. So yeah, if you're in the market for a new game and you haven't tried Baldur's Gate 3, like, whoa, what are you doing? There's a lot of adult content in there. So for my young listeners, hey, don't do that. Just wait a few years and play it when you're older. It will still be just as good. And then you will actually be okay with it. There's also a lot of violence and like gore. And I covered my eyes for a couple scenes. So, you know, do what you need to do. Check out the content warnings. But yeah, it's a really good game. So that's like my personality now. And yeah, it's been great. I have also been reading for school the King Arthur books, because one of my courses this semester is just looking at like that kind of Arthurian lore. And that's actually been super fun. I really thought that it was going to be incredibly boring, but I really love it. And all of it is like, it's so like terrible and it makes no sense and there's no plot continuity. And we're reading, so we've read a few texts, but we've also read La Morte d'Arthur, which is like the kind of Arthurian text. It was when the one guy, he compiled all the stories and tried to make them into a coherent tale, basically. And so it's very long and it contains all these stories and characters, and I think it was like the latest written one. So I want to say it's from, shoot, I should know. I want to say it's from like 1400 something, but I don't know. And you guys don't care, but it's interesting. It's fun. I do like reading it, and it's Middle English. So some of it, you don't quite understand what they're saying, but the vast majority of it, honestly, it has not been hard to read. Like, I would rank it as an easy read, as long as you are comfortable with English as a language. They just kind of move around words, like the sentence structures is odd, but in terms of actually understanding, it's pretty easy. So yeah, I've been loving it. It's extremely, like I said, weird, and the plot doesn't make any sense, and it's so misogynistic. It's actually crazy, but it's so fun to read. I really like it. So, and also in the class, I do like these voices because it's automatic for me. Like, I just do voices for characters. And so I'm talking about it and I'm quoting the characters in the class, and I put on these stupid voices and stupid accents, and like everybody thinks it's so funny, which is great because the class is a night class. So it's terrible because everybody is exhausted. But yeah, I do my voices and most people laugh. I'm sure there's a couple people that hate me in there because, you know, they're like, she thinks she's so funny. And I do. But I don't know who those people are because I'm so busy laughing myself at what I said. So that's great. And for the last bit of news in that kind of same vein, last week I woke myself up in the middle of the night because I told a joke, but I couldn't remember what it was. And also, when I woke up, like, I don't even know. It just didn't make any sense. But in the dream, I thought it was super funny, and I woke myself up laughing. So that was fun. That was amusing. And yeah, I know I'm still funny because of that. So that's good, right? I'm not losing it, even though all I do now is work and school and play one video game. So it's even superseded The Sims 4 in terms of importance and the amount of time I spend playing it, which is crazy. So yeah, and I'm gonna do another run And I'm going to be a drow again. I was a drow this first time. Hey, whoa, fantasy racism? Whoa. I was walking through the game. And I don't know anything about any of these, like, D&D classes, okay? I have no familiarity. I was just like, oh, this one's cool. And I picked it. And then I walked through the game, and all the characters are like, oh, you're a drow. And I was like, whoa, everybody's so mean to me all the time. But it's been really fun. So I'm going to do that again for my next one. And this next time, okay, I'm going to get a Starion. It's going to work. it's going to work. Yeah, no. Anyway, yeah. Sorry. That was so much drama and so much going on at the very beginning of this episode. And now I'm going to talk about the actual topic. So everybody get ready. We're completely changing gears. And now we're talking about bedtime stories. So in this discussion, I am basically going over some of the things that were covered in the article from the Pajama Program. And the article, again, is called Why We Will Always Read Bedtime Stories. And they outlined a few different things that they felt were important and that children got from reading bedtime stories. And so I just wanted to talk about three of these things that they mentioned. And I just wanted to discuss them. So I think that they're all really important and really interesting, and I think you can go a lot of different places with all of them. So the first thing that I wanted to highlight that they talked about was the idea of identity. And so what I have written here from my notes from reading the article are that stories force us to place ourselves in a hypothetical situation and choose a role identifying with characters. So this really, I think, goes along with the more modern sentiment of the fact that we really need diversity in media. Like, it's not, oh, we should have diversity in media. Like, it's a need. We need diversity in the things that we show our children and that we watch ourselves. And the idea is because it's natural when you're consuming a piece of media to look for yourself in it and to look for people and ideas that you identify with. Because this is part of how we feel like we belong in the greater world. And actually, I'm taking a psychology course. This is going to be the last one that I take in college, which is crazy to think about because I love psychology classes. And I'm kind of sad thinking about it, especially because this one's not that great. But my professor is a social psychologist. And for those of you who don't know about sociology, sociology is fake science. And that's my take on that. So if you're a sociology major, like, we have beef with each other because sociology is basically made up. And that's a fact. You can look it up. It's actually not. It's not a fact. That's my personal idea about sociology. But basically, sociology is kind of like, to me, an inferior version of psychology. And so my professor, as a social psychologist, he kind of combines those things. And so some of the things that he's talking about, I agree with. And other things, I think, contain a lot of extrapolation, which I think is mainly what sociology is made up of. I feel like there's a lot of correlation and causation and extrapolation. Like, I feel like they kind of overlay things and make the data say what they want it to say. Whereas in psychology, there's a little bit more concern for actual accuracy. So, but yeah, like, one of the things we're covering, right, basically the main thing actually that we're covering, is this idea that humans have a need to be part of a group, and we constantly are deciding, I'm a part of this group and not this group. Like, we automatically in-group and out-group ourselves and others, and that's just part of how we operate. And some people are more prone to doing this than others, which I think is very interesting. Also culturally, like, the bonds that you feel with other people and groups of people differ a lot. And yeah, so in terms of identity, when we're thinking about stories and we're thinking about movies in general, like, all these things, any kind of story, we're always looking for people that we think are like us in some way. So I was going to give an example of that, but I don't need to, because you can you can think of any number of, like, examples depending on who you are. But it's really every single facet of your identity. It can be a hobby. It can be what you look like. It can be your personality. It can be your goals and your traumas. Like, whatever it is, we're always looking to belong. And so when we're thinking about bedtime stories, okay, we're thinking about speech. We're typically thinking about very simple, short stories that don't have a lot going on. And obviously, like, a lot of time this means that it can be open-ended. So maybe just like the main character, right? They might not even have a name because it's a bedtime story. It's a very simple story that has a very basic arc of like the introduction, and it goes up and something happens, there's a problem, and then at the end they solve the problem, right? It's a very basic story. There's not a whole lot going on. But even in these kinds of stories, when we're talking about young children, they're still looking for things to identify with in these very basic stories, and they're learning basic lessons from what's going on. And it makes them sometimes consider deeper ideas about themselves and about the world. Like, if the main character is going through something, you know, difficult, and then they overcome it, then the child can be like, wow, you know, this character overcame this. Like, I can deal with things too. I can have more self-control. I can do whatever. Like, it gives people this idea, even when they're really small, that they can overcome big things and that they can have the confidence to do whatever it is they need to do. And so in that way, they can look at these stories about characters that they relate to, hopefully, and they can see themselves in these characters. And then it can make them feel like they can do anything. It can make them feel like they're less alone. And it really just helps with this idea of human connection that we're all trying constantly to find and like forge these bonds. And it can assist you when you're small to do that with a character that isn't real, and maybe even like kind of transpose yourself onto them. And this goes up into the next idea, which is the idea of connection. And so for this, I have written, empathizing with characters or hearing stories about characters that somehow resemble us lets us learn from others' experiences, get new ideas about how to respond to things we might encounter in our lives, and feel like we're not alone. It reveals the universal struggle of being human. So as you get older, right, you deal with a lot of things, and life becomes probably more complicated than it was when you were a kid. You start to have more responsibilities, you're developing as a person. And really, when you get older, you're responsible more for your own relationship with other people. Like, when you're an adult, even the bond that you have with your parents is like, it's more personality based as opposed to needs based. And that comes with, that's like the same for everybody, right? When I'm talking to, I'm not going to go with that example either. I was going to talk about like a relationship with like a professor, but they do have to help you to some extent unless they suck. But yeah, it becomes more about you actually facilitating your bonds with other people as opposed to just being there and implied. Like, if you're a child, people should help you when you need help. That's basically true. And when you're an adult, I still think that that's true. I still think people should help each other. But realistically, if you need help, sometimes, most of the time, people probably will not help you. You have to learn how to reach out, how to ask for help, and also how to solve problems on your own. Other people can't assist you with everything, and you do have to realize that you need to take on the role, essentially, of your own caregiver. You get older, you become more independent, you realize, okay, I need to take care of myself, and hopefully you also have a safety net of people that you can rely on, and hopefully also other people know they can rely on you. But basically, you are looking at independence. You're looking at what it is to be an adult and an individual person. So for kids to read stories where, again, characters are overcoming things, characters are going on, you know, some sort of journey and coming out the other side better and having learned things, it's encouraging for kids to see that, you know, change isn't always bad. And even if change is inevitable and things are scary, at the end, even if not everything is perfect and everything isn't the way it was before, maybe in some ways things are better and the character does learn something and they do ultimately benefit from whatever it is that happened. And in particular, I remember that when I was small, I was in like kindergarten, and my great grandma, she lived with us, and she died when I was in kindergarten, and she had been there for my whole life when I was really small. And I can remember that when she died, it was just like, it was obviously an incredible loss. And I saw also my parents going through incredible loss, which was the first time that, you know, like all of a sudden one day you realize that your parents are people. And so I can distinctly remember that, that I was like, whoa, like they're, and I was, I had to be like three and a, no, wait, I was in kindergarten. I had to be four then, right? Yeah. But you know, it was crazy. It was this whole thing. And just dealing with grief at a really young age, dealing with the death of somebody that had lived with you. My mom did everything right. She like, you know, consulted with a therapist, and she got my sister and I these little books that were like talking about the idea of death and grief. And like, she had us do these like activity books of like trying to process the grief. And 'cause when you're a kid, like even just the concept of death, like you really don't understand it. Somebody is there one day and then they're gone the next. And that doesn't factor in the mind of a child who's so built on routine and like, you know, kind of the way things are. And that idea of safety is so important. And so I know that we went through books that were about grief and like trying to process it. And it is just this whole idea that, you know, you can't do everything on your own. And sometimes, most of the time, if you can find yourself in a story, then you do just realize like, oh, I'm not alone. And also because I'm not alone, things are better. Like misery loves company. It's better to be sad with somebody else and take solace in knowing that they feel the same way than it is to just feel like you're isolated, you're completely alone, nobody understands what you're going through. And even if things are really bad, that makes things better, just knowing that other people also know that things are really bad. And I don't specifically know why it makes you feel better to know that other people also don't feel good, but it does. It's helpful to know, and it makes you feel better. And I think there's a sense of security in just knowing that you're not the only one going through something. And I think that with security comes, I don't know, just, it's just comforting to know that you're not by yourself. And that's because nobody likes to be by themselves. And maybe that's because of the sociology thing of like that we're always trying to find a group to be in. We're like, ah, yes, I'm in the misery group. It's a great group to be in. Don't join that group voluntarily. It's something that you're placed in by your circumstances. Don't join it on purpose. But yeah, so just very interesting. And then moving on into the third thing that I think is really, really important about these stories. And it also ties back a little bit into what I said in the introduction for connection about getting new ideas about how to respond to things that we encounter. In terms of the third thing I want to talk about, it's imagination. It's imagination, guys. So it's about imagining new places, ideas, and people, and how doing this kind of exercise of imagination can inspire us to dream of the way that things could be and how we could be. So imagination, I think, I don't want to say it's the most important, but I think it might be the most downplayed by adults in terms of when we're talking about stories and how they shape us and how they inspire us. Because when you get older, right, and this is a theme actually that I've discussed on the show before, the emphasis that is placed on imagination goes way down once you get older, because it's really just, you know, hey, you have to, it's the stuff I just talked about where like you have to take care of yourself, you need to be an individual, you need to focus on your identity and your connections with other people. And it's really just an emphasis on the here and now, brick and mortar, real world. Or worst case scenario, on the internet and the digital world. Hey, not good. The internet's not real. But yeah, just this idea that these kinds of stories, when you're a kid, you get to kind of go outside of yourself and imagine people and places and things that you don't actually know in real life. And it expands your mind to be able to think about the world that way. And it expands your mind to think about people that you haven't met and faraway places that may or may not exist. Like, to a kid, a country around the world is the same as an imaginary place. And actually, that's true for a lot of, like, for a lot of us when we get older, right? Because where have I never been? I've never been to Moscow, Russia, okay? For me, Moscow is a faraway place. It's it's a place that I have some set idea in my mind about, right? When I think about it, I'm picturing it, but I've never actually been there. It's just an idea to me. That's the same as that's the same as the Death Star. To me, the Death Star from Star Wars is a place that I have a picture of in my mind. I've never been there. I have some ideas about it. I know who built it. I know the leader. And that's the same thing about Moscow, right? I know some basic history. I know basically, like, you know, the architecture, how it looks. Like, these are two things that I have equal understanding of, but one of them is fiction and one of them is a real place where real people are living. And so in that way, our imagination is really kind of the factor in how we view the world, not just around us, but far, far away, maybe even a galaxy far, far away. Sorry, it was so stupid. I wasn't even thinking about that when I said the double far, but I think deep down in my mind, like, it just, it happened. Magic happened. There was a spark. Sorry. But yeah, imagination is really how we interact with the world and people that we've never met and places we've never been and maybe never will go to. Maybe I'll never go to Moscow, but my idea of that location is still what it is, and it'll remain that probably until whatever, until I learn new information, which, hey, you should always be looking for new information. But it can also inspire us to change how things are. If I'm looking around and I'm like, hey, there's this injustice happening, or, you know, this could be better, we should improve it. Like, you need a certain level of imagination to think about how things could be instead of how they are. And it's really important to be able to say, hey, we should improve on this, and hey, we should change this, instead of just being like, well, that's the way things are, and shrugging it off and being like, well, you know, we'll never be able to change it. Like, in order for there to be change, somebody has to picture a world that's different. And there's a lot of fiction that basically the main goal of it is to do that, right? Like, the whole idea behind The Hunger Games is, like, so many people still make fun of that series, right? It's like, it's not the best written. The concept is very, like, now people look back at it and they're like, the concept is very basic YA. The main character is not special. She's thrown into a situation against her will and she conquers everything. Like, so basic, so basic. And it's like, something can be, from a critical standpoint, quite basic and also still really have an impact on the minds of the people that are engaging with the content. Like, something like that. There are so many people who read The Hunger Games and they were like, oh my gosh, like, I've never thought about the world this way before. And it was so revolutionary for so many people. And again, looking back critically, hey, it's not that great. Like, but there are still so many people who read it even for the first time now. And they're like, oh my gosh, this is crazy. The concept is just so wild. Like, it really just depends on you as an individual and where you're at. But even now, as somebody that's never read the books, I just am familiar with the concept and I've seen the movies, which are really good. And I don't want to hear on any hate for the Hunger Games movies starring Jay Hutch and Jennifer Lawrence. They, you know, the things that it's trying to talk about for, like, capitalism and, like, the wealthy and the way that they oppress the lower classes, like, those are relevant ideas. And even if you don't particularly resonate with that media and that story, you can still understand those broader concepts and be like, yeah, I think those concepts are worth talking about, and I think that they're worth discussing. And so that is kind of, that's not like, I mean, it's not really like a bedtime story, but, you know, it's a larger idea that's taken from the idea of these kinds of smaller stories. And so when we're talking about bedtime stories now, okay, switching back away from stories in general, and talking about bedtime stories in particular, when we're talking about building imagination and forming your own identity, who it is that you feel like you relate to and connect to, these stories are really important for kids when they're thinking about themselves in the future. It helps them picture where their lives could be when it's not in the present and right now, which, again, is really kind of where you live when you're small. You just think about right now, today, and you're not so much thinking, who will I be in 5 years? Which, hey, on the record, for the record, I was thinking about those things as a child, and it made me very lonely and sad. And that was crazy. as a child, I think this is also part of why I was able to lucid dream, or perhaps the other way around. I think they were interconnected. I was thinking about big picture stuff, like, from a very young age. And I was thinking about, you know, what will I be like when I'm 18? What will I be like when I'm a mom, like my mom? Like, I was already thinking about stuff like that. And I know that not everybody is. But I think that for me, that is, like, part of why I engaged with books so much and why I really loved reading, because it let me escape from those thoughts and it let me kind of get a reprieve from thinking about those really intense things. But also it made me think about them in another form that was easier to digest, because then you're moving into a world where you don't actually have to be stressed about the outcome. So you're reading and you're stressed and you're like, oh my gosh, I hope this happens and this character's okay. But really, you know, it's not real. And so even if you're crying reading the last Red Queen book, Broken Throne, you actually know that it's really actually okay because those people are not real. So, but anyway, yeah, I think that all these things are true. It's really important for kids to be thinking about ideas like this. And I think probably, I don't want to say as I've gotten older, because I've thought this for a long time, but just continuing to get older, and this is actually crazy. The first person from my high school class is majorly pregnant, gonna have a kid this year. Hey, whoa, chill. But just really like thinking about stuff like that, I think probably the worst thing that I see people do as a parent is not treat their children as people. Like, working with kids at the daycare and doing all the work that I've done with children, and then also just having been such a self-aware child myself, it was really easy to tell for me, and it is easy to tell for me, I think, when people think of kids as just like dolls or like items, just this idea that they kind of have to fit into the parents' world. And like, you know, you're my kid, so you need to do this, this, and this. It's like, your kid is an individual with a distinct personality. And realistically, they might not like the same things that you like, and they might not want to do the same things you do. Like, if you're a super extroverted person, your kid might be a really introverted person, and that's okay. They're just different from you. And I think that a lot of the times when I'm talking to kids, like, people don't speak to them in a way that's logical and normal like they would if they were older. And 90% of the time that works. Like, there was this kid the other day, okay, and he wasn't sharing. I'm volunteering, okay? I'm volunteering at my church in the daycare now, because I'm not working at the other daycare center anymore. And so I was like, hey, I'll just volunteer with kids. And so I'm in the preschool section. And so this kid, right, he's not sharing. He's taking all the Hot Wheels, literally like 60 cars, okay? He's taking all of them. And I'm like, hey, like, you're not sharing. You got to share. And he literally starts crying. And I'm like, bro, like, you got to share. Like, and he's just like, no. And I'm like, if you don't share, nobody will want to be your friend and they won't play with you. And he just like stops. And you can see the gears in his mind turning. You can see him thinking. And he says, no, again. And I said, okay, then, you know, this other kid won't want to play with you. And then I walk away. And then literally about 40 seconds later, he comes over to me and he's like, he doesn't want to play with me. And I was like, well, did you share? And he goes back. And he gives the kid a ton of cars. And he looks at me and he goes, look, I'm sharing. And I'm like, good job. And then the other kid was playing with him. And it's like, it's just like a realistic, like, I'm like, hey, I'm not telling you to share because I just am making you do that. Like, I'm telling you that the reason that you need to share is because other kids will not like you if you do not share. And it's like, some people, right, they'd hear that and be like, that's so mean that you said that. And it's like, did I lie? Was anything I said untrue? And it's like, in general, okay, like, when I'm working with kids, when I'm volunteering with kids, they respond really well to that, and they understand, and they're logical, and they think it through, and you can see them thinking it through. And it's also super interesting to see the difference between kids who instantly respond to that because it's clear that their parents operate the same way versus kids like that who, like, I said that to him and his brain was turning. And it's like, I take that as, like, maybe he's not used to people outlining it in black and white for him, because kids, again, they're not thinking in, like, super abstract ways. They're thinking of the here and now. And he's like, I want to play with all these Hot Wheels. But it's like, you have to think bigger than that. And so I think stories help illustrate big concepts, like maybe, you know, even death, like I was talking about before, for kids who they're not equipped to deal with those big concepts yet, maybe, in terms of their real life. But in fiction, you can package it so that it's easier to digest. And if they're not ready for it, they don't really have to pay attention to it. And so I think it's just a safe way to deliver these kinds of ideas to kids. If them start thinking about bigger ideas like connection and identity and what they might want their world to look like. And it helps them form goals when they're identifying with characters. It helps them think about what they maybe want to do with their lives and just in general. So, and even what kind of person they want to be. Because as a kid, you're forming your identity. Like, every day when you're interacting with other people, when you're talking to adults, like, if people treat you like you're stupid, then you're probably going to think that you're stupid, even if it's for the rest of your life. And if people talk to you like you're really intelligent when you're a kid, then it'll become part of your identity that you think that you're very intelligent. And that's something that'll also stick with you forever, probably. So, yeah, very, very interesting. And then, okay, here's my thought for the next episode, okay? So right now I'm talking about fairy tales as an idea, as a concept. I would really like to get feedback from people. This is a feedback request. If you guys would be interested in hearing me go over some fairy tales, and I'm talking about, like, I have, like, a beautiful leather-bound copy of Brothers Grimm, and then I also have a treasury of Irish fairy and folk tales. And I can also go online. I know, I'm trying to think of, like, the specific ones, because I have probably not a Chinese one because they're so freaking long. but I could find some other ones too that are, like, more global, if we wanted to do that, but really just, like, go over them. And it would basically just be like a read through. And I think the target audience for those would be people who listen to the show to fall asleep. And I don't know how many of you do that. So I'm just trying to gauge interest here for that. And that I'd probably do that for, like, 2 episodes. And then if it got more interest, I could keep doing that because I enjoy reading fairy tales. And I would be game to do that more. But yeah, so I think it would be interesting. And then you could play it and go to sleep to it, and it would be fun for everybody. And it wouldn't be just a straight read through. It would be like, I would stop for a second and be like, well, that was crazy. You know what I mean? But yeah, I think it could be fun. But if you're not interested, then that's fine. I'm not super attached to it. I've just been thinking about it for a while, and I wanted to kind of pitch it to y'all and see what the reaction was. And then I have a couple episode ideas lined up in the meantime for while you're responding to that idea. So I will put that in the Spotify, like, description part, and then you can respond in the little box. And if you're listening somewhere else that's not on Spotify, you can, like, you know, message me on Instagram or email the podcast. There are other ways to get in touch. And I am interested in hearing from everybody, not just the Spotify listeners. So let me know, por favor. That would be awesome. Yeah, I think that's everything. I've talked for almost exactly an hour. We have 45 seconds until it's an hour. And, you know, we're going to go a little over that probably. So yeah, I've caught you all up on some drama in my life that was very short lived. Yeah, I think that's everything. Let me know what you think about this episode and others, and please submit more episode requests. Let me know if you want to do the kind of fairy tale read through series. I think it would be fun. Maybe if you're not sure, we could do one episode and try it and see if it's fun and interesting. I have a couple stories that are my favorites that I've talked about on the show before, but obviously I haven't read through them with everybody. So I would want to start with those. And yeah, it would be cool. So let me know. And at 1 hour and 5 seconds, thanks for listening in, and dream on, everybody.